You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
On May 20th, major label recording artists and radical leftists, the International Noise Conspiracy, began their very first headlining tour across Canada. The band is from Sweden, and their first Canadian stop was in Vancouver at the Plaza Club. They formed in 1998, and their music has been described as punk rock played like 70s hard rock, or the other way around, with lyrics straight from the heart and straight to the point. Red Eye's Chris Spanos caught up with singer Dennis Lixon during their sound check. He did the interview for the Vancouver Participatory Economics Collective. They spoke about the band's inception, rock and roll, punk rock, politics, art, the effect of capitalism on music, and challenges faced in advancing social change. Chris began the interview by asking Dennis how they managed to land their first record deal and tour in China, rather than their own home country, Sweden.
Our first couple of shows were actually in Sweden, but then our first proper tour was of China. And it was one of those coincidences, you know, sometimes life just takes you to uncharted territories. I think it's the first show we ever played. We played in our hometown, and a friend we knew was there, and his friend was the kid that lived in China. And we started talking, and he's like, "Oh, I have this record label. You guys were great. Do you want to put out a record?" And we're like, "Yeah, if you bring us over to China to tour." And we both kind of laughed at the prospect. And then a couple of months later, we were in China. We had the record out on his label, and we're touring China. But I think it was very much a product of curiosity and just doing something, setting the bar for the band in a way that it's kind of unexpected.
Well, I imagine it would be different. I mean, you're a rock and roll band, and then you're going into China, and I understand that you played in numerous underground clubs with police out front, in fact. You know, what was that like?
It was great. It's like, it was cool to be there because we came there in 1999, so it's like the burgeoning of their music scene, and rock music is still fairly new to China. So it's cool to go there because if you tour the rest of the world, there's always like a preconceived notion and preconceived idea about how rock bands are supposed to be and how crowds are supposed to respond and react. And just coming to China, they didn't really know how to react and how to respond, and they didn't know what to think of our band. And it was a very refreshing kind of experience. Yeah,
there's a whole range of music, obviously, from hip-hop to jazz and classical, R&B and soul. But mostly your music seems to be rock and roll, and in the tradition of 60s and 70s rock, which back then had a liberatory effect in that period. What role do you think rock and roll plays now, and what role do you think it has for social liberation?
Unfortunately, I don't think it's as a tool for social change or liberation. I don't think it's as potent as it used to be, because I think one of the problems is that not only rock music, but music in general always kind of coincided with good, like, big social movements and social changes. And I think today there is a problem because there's no real big social movement happening right now, and there's no, music movement to coincide with it, which I think is a problem. I mean, it's one of those deals where you play in a band like us, you want to kind of have a purpose to what you're doing, and you want to be a part of something that gives you this purpose. And it's hard because there's nothing. I mean, for a while there's this whole globalization movement, or anti-globalization movement, if you so will. And we played a bunch of shows and did a bunch of demos, but then that kind of, after 9/11, all that kind of died down. And it's kind of weird because a lot of times we feel kind of lonely in what we do. So unfortunately, I don't think it has a role it used to have in the 60s and the 70s, where it was kind of even the 80s, like in England or with like the hip-hop, early hip-hop scene and stuff like that. I think it had much more of it had a bigger effect than it has right now, which is kind of a shame.
Mm-hmm. Let's look at some of the band's political influences. A lot of the album titles and songs and videos contain phrases and slogans from the Situationists and who were agitators in the May 68 Paris uprising. What role have they had in influencing your music, and how has that influence played out?
I think it's like one of those deals where we all come from a radical leftist background, and the Situationist movement was just something that starting to read about it. It was a very rock and roll kind of movement, and it's very well suited. I mean, I'm sure, you know, there's going to be some Situationist people out there kind of a bit pissed off, but it's very suitable for sloganry, because they're kind of experts on that. But it's also a very interesting movement, because it's like right in the breaking point of modernism and postmodernism, where, you know, you have a little bit of like modernism with like the kind of the black and white schematics of the world and kind of the big solution to the big problem, and then you have postmodernism, which is very kind of there's no answer, there's no solution, there's no wrong and right, there's just, you know. And I think Situationists were interesting because they're kind of middle, right in the breaking point of that. They acknowledge the fact that it's not as easy as a big solution to a big problem, but they also still have hope in you know, wanting to change the world and actually wanting to do something. And you know, their example of how crazy and how fucked up they were very punk rock, and you just struck a chord with the people like us. We're like, well, we can kind of relate to what they're doing. I mean, also when they first got together, they were not academics, and they were not like politicians, but they were like artists and poets and painters and writers, and then they got together and then they actually kicked out all the artist elements out of the group. But I mean, as far as like their initial take on politics, was very unpolitical take on politics, which is very, very inspiring. Because I mean, that's how we got into politics. None of us got into politics because of politics. All of us got into politics because of punk rock music. And
I was going to ask how you were politicized and how that played out in the group.
Yeah, and that's kind of what happened. Like I grew up in a small like working class community in the north of Sweden, where politics wasn't something that was spoken. Like people kind of lived their politics because it's like a working class town, but it wasn't something people spoke about. And I didn't really know anything about, you know, politics until I was like a teenager, and I got into punk rock music. I was kind of felt like an outsider and felt kind of alienated. And then when I started listening to punk music, I was like, wait, these people are actually telling me, first of all, it's okay to be an outsider, and then you can find strength in being an outsider. And then they try to explain why you felt like an outsider and what you can do about it. And it was just like one of those feelings when, like, you know, I bought a Dead Kennedys record, and like the minute I put it on, I just had this feeling that nothing's ever going to be the same again for me. And I instantly knew that this is it, you know, like this is everything I've kind of been waiting my 15 years in my life. This is everything I've been waiting for. And it was kind of intense. So that's how I got into politics. And also it's one of those deals where I like the freedom of being an artist that talks about politics, because anytime you become an academic or a journalist or a politician, you have to kind of cover your flanks. You have to really, you know, think before you speak. And I like the whole concept of just speaking your mind and exaggerating or saying things that are not necessarily, doesn't always have to add up. You know what I mean? It's not like I have to, everything I say, I don't have to mean it the way I'm saying it, which is the beautiful thing about it. An artistic expression, you know, like I love that, and I'm not interested in politics in the political kind of sense.
Well, I wanted to ask, you know, one challenge for artists is communicating those ideas of, you know, if it's political ideas of liberation. And, you know, a lot of your other songs, we talked about the Situationist influence, but a lot of your other songs have references to Emma Goldman and Buenaventura Daruti and Angela Davis. You know, how you communicate those ideas, in how they translate into action for social change, and that being a big challenge for artists.
Yeah.
How does that play out in producing your music?
I think the most important thing for me has always been that everything we do is a setup to inspire other people. And I mean, our goal and ambition is for people to feel the same way that we felt the first time we heard The Clash or The Dead Kennedys or whatever random punk band inspired us. And that's kind of our, you know, that's our goal, kind of like to inspire people that way. But then I think it's also up to the people being inspired to actually do something creative with their life. I mean, for me, the political thing that I did was that I started a band, and I talk about this every night, and I, you know, that's how I transform these political ideas into action, like being on stage or doing interviews or playing benefit shows or, you know, writing lyrics and about this. And but then I think it's up to other people to kind of find a place, a space, a setting where they feel that they got something to give. So I think a problem with leftist politics is that a lot of times it tends to be this kind of cliche about how you're supposed to be, how you're supposed to look, how you're supposed to act. And like, well, if you want to be an activist, that's how you do it. And this is how you do it. And I think one thing I learned about hanging out in the leftist circles for the last 16, 17 years is that there's so many different ways of trying to, you know, try to achieve a revolution or try to achieve a change. And I think that it's kind of naive to believe that there's one way or a certain way to do it. And I think that if you find a way or a place where you feel comfortable, and then you can actually do it better. And it's one of those things, well, if you're not inspired, how can you inspire other people? And, you know, a lot of times I see people, they come into the leftist movement, they're really gung-ho, they're really radical, they're like, you know, we're gonna change the world. And then after passing out flyers for 2 years, they're like, oh, fuck this, I'm not, you know, not even gonna do this anymore.
It's not fun, it's not empowering.
Exactly, and therefore I think you need to find an outlet and a way of expressing your political ideas that combines with your life in a you know, healthy kind of way. And I mean, for someone like us, like politics is not on my mind 24 hours a day, but it's something that we deal with every day. And I kind of find a good balance between like living my life and having a good time, but also doing something creative and useful with it. And I think that also enables us to see a long-term perspective on politics, realizing that, you know, this is something that we do for a long time because it's something that needs to be done for a long time.
Yes, fun and you know, having fun is part of making it sustainable for the long run to achieve successful social change.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it also, if people see that you're having a good time and seeing that it's not a chore, you know, people are like, oh my, wow, it seems cool to be into politics. Because, I mean, people's concept or perception of politics is usually like middle-aged men in like kind of, you know, crappy suits talking about budget proposals. And I mean, you and me know that politics is so much more, you know, so much more everyday life activities. And I think that if you show people that these activities can be empowering, these that can be fun, it can be like, you know, useful, I think that inspires people more than just trying to, you know, point the finger and tell them what to do, you know.
It's one of the things I had in mind about the question of rock and roll as a medium, because in many ways, you know, to be, especially a youth trying to organize or, you know, for whatever, anti-capitalism or, you know, against occupation and war, a lot of the organizing, it can, you know, the culture of it can be boring and really stifling, right? And so rock and roll, although politics isn't everything, right? There's other aspects of life. But, you know, people somehow believe that organizing can just be boring it has to be boring. You're not allowed to have fun.
Yeah.
So rock and roll, in a sense, kind of subverts that, too.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's also what we try to do. Like, we try to play, if there's a chance and a possibility, we just try to play, like, benefits or try to play, like, events like that to show people that you can actually get together, you can have people having speeches, you can have demonstrations, you can have a good time with it. And, but I also think there's a certain idea about how a leftist movement is supposed to be very super, super idealistic, almost like if you're a radical leftist, you kind of have to be a monk almost, like, you know, no material possessions whatsoever, and you're not supposed to have a good... I mean, I'm just like, self-sacrifice is such a kind of a... It's kind of a big part of the leftist movement. It becomes very religious, and I'm not very interested in that. Right. I like to have a good time, but I also, you know, when it comes down to it, I mean, you got to do what you got to do, but, I mean, also you have to be able to live your life. So when it comes down to you got to do what you got to do, you have the strength and energy to do it, you know?
Coming back to producing music, I've read elsewhere that you don't think that there's any real difference between producing music for a major record label or, say, working in a factory or grocery store. Could you elaborate on the similarities and differences you think there might be?
There are, of course, a lot of differences because as a culture worker, you have a little bit of more... leeway. You can do a bit more freedom, but I mean, at the end of the day, like, it comes down to you working for a big corporation making money off of your work, and that's the capitalist setup. And I think that's, it's pretty similar. It doesn't matter if you're a musician or a movie star or you know, or you work in a factory. It's like, it's kind of the same setup. Someone else is making money off of your work, and you know, the boss is always going to be the boss.
Right, right. And there's the other angle, I guess, too, of how different kinds of work actually, you know, affect people's personalities and characters and all that.
Yeah, I mean, of course, like to play in a band and to have a very, like, creative work is, of course, I mean, it is a privilege. I mean, I'm not, you know, I have to acknowledge that. It's like, it's a pretty good work. But at the end of the day, if we come down, if we're not talking about, you know, how that affects you, like, you know, that was me probably talking about straight economics, like the capitalist setup of the way things are. Like, yes, you know, like you work in a factory, you work at a work, there's always someone making money off of your work. But then again, I mean, I acknowledge the fact that this is a probably better job to have, and it's probably more creative, and it's probably more, you know, fulfilling. Even though at times it doesn't feel like that, but I mean, that's just me being, you know, spoiled, I guess.
Do you have any thoughts on what the implications of those insights might be? Because, like, the balance between creative work and then, you know, maybe as an artist or, you know, any even creative elements of, you know, regular factory worker, and then the more rote jobs. I mean, that's an insight. I think it provides insight into the division of labor and all work.
Yes, I do. I do think about those divisions, and I do think about what it means. And I think that at least at one time or another, we attacked the fucking weird notion that people that are creative or people that, you know, write books or play music are some kind of like super people. That and there's only a few of us that can be that creative. But I mean, it's also because we live in a setup where you're not allowed to do things if you don't make money off of it. So it doesn't really matter how creative you are. If you can't find a way for your creativity to be profitable, people are not going to take your creativity seriously, which is a huge problem. And I think that people are just creative kind of by, you know, by default. And but we live in a kind of a system that set it up so there's only a few people that kind of trickle through and actually make a living off of their creativity, which makes it also, it's kind of telling the rest of the people, like, oh, you can't become as great as these people. And just like the whole idol genius kind of myth. And there's been a couple of times when we talked out about that and said, you know, it's like, just a matter of, like, I think for a lot of people, it's just a matter of finding that Clash record when you're a kid or, you know, like being exposed to something different. I think that the things that we learn and the things that we can do, pretty much anyone can do. I mean, yeah, some people are better at playing music than others, but I don't think if we would live in a world where we didn't have to, like, wage labor every day, you know, like, I don't think everybody would want to become a musician. You know what I mean? I think that's kind of a unreasonable thought that everybody wants to play music. Not everybody wants to do that, but people want to find other ways of expressing themselves. And yeah, but it's just hard because we live in a culture, as I said, where if you don't make money off of it, it's not kind of a real way of expressing yourself.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, it's kind of, if we did have like a classless society or something, there would be many more doctors. Not that everybody would be doctors, but there would be many more bands like the Rolling Stones or something, you know, not the Rolling Stones.
No. And I think that's, I mean, it's one of the things that we think about a lot, because, I mean, irregardless of how political we are and how much kind of a fuck you punk attitude we have, if we're not selling any records, we're not going on tour. If we're not going on tour, we're not making any money. You know, like, you have to think about these things. You have to think about the fact that some way along the line, you have to be able to pay the rent, you know. And that's something that you think about when you write your songs, you know. Not kind of, not maybe consciously, but in the back of your head, you know, that if you write too weird of a songs, no one will like your songs, and then you won't be able to put out records. And, I mean, that's something that's kind of stifling for creativity. Just, I mean, just imagine saying, like, living in a world where music or creative work is not not defined by money. The music would be amazing, you know. Mm-hmm. Creative work would be amazing. But right now we live in a world where kind of the record labels dictate how things are supposed to sound and how long songs are supposed to be and how bands are supposed to look. And it's just kind of disheartening.
Looking at more of the concrete production of the music, is the music is the band a collective, and how does the musical process unfold with the band?
We're very much a collective. We're one of the few bands I know that if we're not all four of us actually practicing together, we can't really make music. Because mm-hmm. it's, I mean, usually it's like someone has an idea or two and we pitch it, and then we'll do what the bands in the 70s did. We just jam, and then after an hour, usually we have like a good kind of base for a song. But that's always how we've done it. We always been like, we always get together, all of us, to work out these things together. We don't have like a songwriter. Sometimes we wish we had like someone that actually wrote songs and be like, this is what we're supposed to play. But because this whole jamming, like, it's like, if you have a good day, it's great. If you have a bad day, you just feel like you're the crappiest band in the world. So it's hard.
The band is obviously inspired by modern day social movements, and one of the things I get from your music is energy and you know, some inspiration for you know, I like to have a good time, I like to listen to good music and you know, groove or whatever, and I get that, and so I find your music also inspiring. So what are your thoughts on that relationship between you know, mutual inspiration from social movements and artists, and what that symbolizes?
But like we talked a little bit about earlier, I think that you want to find a place and a setting where your music makes sense on a not just a scale of like people being kind of a bit inspired, but where there's a purpose. And I mean, 2001 was a great year. We played like a bunch of protests. We were at a bunch of protests for like the, you know, like the anti-globalization movement, and that made us have a proper purpose with a lot of things that we're saying and doing. And so in that sense, I mean, we got immensely inspired by being at these protests and demonstrations and talking to people involved in the movement. And what we always said is, like, you know, playing music now, it's not like we're going to be in the forefront of the revolution or anything. We're not going to be, like, the vanguard elite. But we'll definitely want to be, like, when the revolution comes to town, we'll definitely put up a stage there, and we'll play when the revolution rolls in. And that's kind of our take on it. Like, we want to be the inspiration to these people that are us as well. But, you know, these people are actually doing this grassroots organization work, and they're actually protesting. And as much as we're part of that movement, we also want to be a soundtrack for those people to be inspired by.
Your music and politics are being heard and seen in a variety of mainstream outlets, MTV, and even here in Canada's Much Music. Mm-hmm. How important do you think it is to reach out to the mainstream, and why?
It's one of those fundamental questions that we fight over a lot. But I think that, you know, like, coming from a punk rock background, sometimes it's hard to reconcile with the fact that we're not like a DIY underground punk band anymore. And it kind of wears you down sometimes thinking about that. But at the same time, also knowing, like, from experience that, I mean, where I grew up, like, I was lucky to find those records that I found, you know. But also knowing that a lot of people won't be able to find these DIY punk rock underground records where they live, and I just think it's important. I think it's important for a message like the one we have to be everywhere. I think it's important for it to be in, like, the DIY punk rock underground scene, but I also think it's important to be, like, on MTV or somewhere where just normal people would see it. And I think that's something that's, I mean, if you're interested in, like, keeping punk rock underground, yeah, I'm sure we sold out about a million times, but I've never really been interested in that. And no matter how corny, like, looking back, maybe someone like Rage Against the Machine now, you think, oh, it was kind of rap rock, what were you thinking? But I know, like, 20 kids that got into politics, like, learned about Lena Pilcher, learned about Mumia Abu-Jamal because of Rage Against the Machine. And I mean, that's, like, that's something to be considered. And I think that the problem with being, like, a bigger band talking about politics is that a lot of people look at you and they're like, you're on MTV or you have a successful single or whatever, and you talk about politics. People look at you and they're like, well, I guess they're going to set things straight. And you know what I mean? Like, a lot of people looked at Rage Against the Machine and they're like, well, they're kind of a failure because they didn't really change the world. But I think that's not really the point of it. Like, the point of it is to be out there and be like, you know, talk about ideas, and hopefully they trickle down to people and, you know, make room for something more radical to come about. And I mean, I would love to turn on MTV and see a bunch of fucking radical socialists on MTV and be like, I'd be pretty excited about that. Yeah. But usually that's not the case. Usually, I mean, you know, it's like the watered down version of everything. I mean, I'm, you know, I love punk rock music. I turn on MTV and there's all these punk bands. I'm just like, it's got nothing to do with the music I grew up with, you know? So we just try to be there. And if someone gives us a microphone on, like, I don't know how many bands have been on MTV and talked about squatting and talk about choplifting and talk about, you know, stuff like that. And we try to be that band, you know, like, if they give us a microphone, we're like, oh, we'll say something that, you know, that we think is important. And hopefully someone will pick up on that and pick up our record and maybe read the liner notes or check out some book tips we have. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, this leads me to my next question, which I think you have touched on throughout the interview in numerous ways, but I want to just ask you directly. The group that I'm involved with, the Vancouver Participatory Economics Collective, we write essays, do interviews, you know, actions, whatever. We try to create the conditions where, after an event, people are more empowered than they were before event, or leave some kind of residue or infrastructure behind that kind of says, this is the difference between, you know, before organizing against capitalism and then, you know, after this event that was, you know, we're still organizing against capitalism, but now it's made a difference somehow. Mm-hmm. The band produces music, videos, concerts. How does this play out for you in the music, in the cultural realm?
Pretty much the same way. I mean, when people come to our shows and they see us play, and as we talked about before, like, making them realize that it's a good time to be a socialist or, you know, whatever. And we always bring the AK Press books on tour. We always try to talk to people. Like, just hang out and talk to people and be like, if they're interested in what we're saying, just talk to them. And so hopefully our ambition is when people leave the show that we'll have this little, like, clenched fist thinking, like, fuck yeah. You know, yeah, we could actually do something. And but then also, I mean, more concrete things are that play a lot of benefits. We try to do that. We did a live record where all the proceeds went to ISM, the International Solidarity Movement that sends people down to Palestine, and just try to do stuff like that. That's more like concrete, actual work. I mean, it's one of those things, like, you have to balance, because, like, you know, 6 months of the year we can barely pay the rent, but then when we actually have time and energy, we can do stuff like that and just try to do good creative work, that the stuff that we know how to do, you know, like, we're good at playing music, so we can try to use that. And we played a bunch of shows like that in Sweden and even in the States, actually played a couple of, like, you know, and the occupation kind of rallies, mm-hmm, and stuff like that. And I think it's an important thing to do, and that's more like concrete things that we can, mm-hmm, do. Everyone in the band used to be more or less involved in political groups at home, but it's one of those deals where we're never home. So it's one of those deals where it's like signing on to learn how to, you know, to learn Kung Fu, but you're only at one practice every other month. It doesn't really make any sense, you know what I mean? And that's kind of how we all felt. I mean, even Inge, our bass player, he ran for office in our hometown with the Socialist Party like a couple of years ago. So I mean, we all been kind of involved in more like, but then I mean, this just became full time job, and we realized that if we actually want to do something, we should put all our effort into the band and everything that surrounds the band. Mm-hmm. But I think it's an important thing just to inspire people and make them feel like they're part of the event that we're doing tonight. Like, not only like we're the band and they're the crowd, but I actually try to somehow, I mean, it's something that you struggle with like every day as like a performer, an artist, that make people feel like they're involved in what's going on. And it's a challenge. Some nights doesn't work out at all. Some nights it's just like, you know, the stage is too high, there's a barrier, there's like security, like the second the show is over, everyone's out the door, you know what I mean? It's just like, mm-hmm. Some nights it doesn't work out, and some nights it's great. Like, you have this like sense of communication, is it becomes like a service of sorts. And then after the show, you'll hang out for like 2-3 hours, just talk to people and hang out. And it's like, some nights it's perfect, and some nights also, like, you go up on stage and you talk about politics and people fucking get it, and they're like, fuck yeah, you know. Some nights you go out and talk about politics and people just like look at you like, I don't, this guy's kind of out of his mind. Some nights you go out and you don't talk about politics at all and people get it. So it's like, it's like one of those things, like, you never know. Like, every other night you're just like, you say something and people totally respond, and then you say it next night and people are like, this guy is kind of obviously out of his mind. So it's really hard, but it keeps it kind of interesting as well, you know.
That was Chris Spanos interviewing Dennis Lixon from the International Noise Conspiracy. They spoke on June 20th. To find out more about the band, their music, videos, and touring, you can visit their website at internationalnoise.com.